Hello?
Good afternoon. This is Alana calling from the loft at Montage Laguna Beach.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
We are just calling to say that we received an email trying to make a reservation for you tonight. And we were wondering if 545 would be all right with you.
Unfortunately, we can't come. The couple that was going to come to have dinner with us, unfortunately, has been in a car accident and they've been horribly mangled.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
So should I cancel that for you?
I mean, I may still go. You have the rotisserie chicken, right?
Sorry?
You have the rotisserie chicken still on that menu?
I believe we do. Let me check.
And that's good. That chicken's good. Have you had it with the fava beans?
Let's see. Yes, we still do have our rotisserie chicken.
Okay, so you know, we're going to find another couple. Can we do 4 at 5 p.m.?
4 at 5 p.m.?
Yes, thank you so much.
Of course.
It's very sad what happened, but they weren't a fun couple anyway.
Right. It all works out for the best, I guess.
Doesn't it always?
I did not know what the cold open was today, and it does all work out for the best. That's right, I'm Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report. It is April 4th, 2024. We're live streaming on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Share, subscribe, tap that notification bell. Post-game show, RubinReport.locals.com. And it is Thursday, so we are doing a Rubin Report Locals community Q&A, but I do want to start with just a couple quick hits, just some clips that are interesting that I just couldn't get to earlier in the week that didn't quite fit with the narratives that we were putting out there. And we've got a couple people that I'm putting on my list. You know, we've got our Don Lemon list, where once a month we're just going to add somebody to this list of people that we don't talk about anymore, that maybe I just have to punch a clown, which, by the way, the punching of the clown yesterday, big hit online. People were very excited about that. They want more punching of clowns, and we'll see if we can work it in. We don't want to, you know, I don't want to become a parody of myself, so we'll see if we can make that happen. But we've got that lemon list about people who we're just going to just not talk about anymore. It's just like, okay, do your thing. We're not stopping you from being on the platforms and speaking freely. We just have no interest in you anymore. But then there's another list I'm interested in, which is sort of just like the sane, somewhat centrist people who are interesting and willing to talk to people and everything else. And two of those people, we've got a couple clips of today, Dr. Phil and Sage Steele. Dr. Phil, of course, you guys all know, I had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and Sage Steele, formerly of ESPN, now going independent. And as she is going independent, she's releasing a little insider information as to how corporate control over journalists actually is. It's not that surprising, but it is sort of interesting. So let's just dive right in with two clips from Dr. Phil, who is also independent now. And on his new show, he confronted two female Hamas apologists. And there's a lot of interesting insight here. Take a look.
What do you think Israel was going to do when Hamas cuts a hole in the fence and comes over the top and kills 1,300 people? What did you think they should have done?
I think they have every right to go in combat with Hamas, but I don't think they have the right for 92% of the death count to be civilians.
If they burn an infant in a crib, do you see that as a moral equivalent to a collateral death from a bomb being dropped as an act of war?
They have explicitly targeted civilian areas that have been marked as civilian areas. Israel has the registry for every person in Gaza.
And if that's where the enemy is hiding, do they have a right to attack them?
No, they do not have the right to kill.
There are some things that are just fundamental human decency. And when I ask you if what happened on October 7th is something you condemn, and you say, well, you have to look at that by looking at hundreds of years of conflict. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's either right or it's wrong, and it was wrong, and I don't need 100 years of conflict to know it was wrong.
The fact of the matter is that Hamas, yes, did take innocent life. Why did Hamas take away innocent life? Why was Hamas platformed? Why was Hamas funded? Why is Hamas empowered to take away innocent life?
Let me tell you something. When somebody comes over a fence and goes into someone's house and burns their infant in its crib, I don't give a damn why they did it. It's wrong.
I like that, Dr. Phil. You know, it's like we don't have anyone, or we have so few people that just like plainly lay it out, like right, wrong, right in someone's face. The fact that that girl is from University of Michigan, it's like we know we have Hamas supporters in this country. I mean, they're rallying on the streets and they're all over Europe for sure. And that is a huge problem that we probably will have hell to pay for here in the United States. Of course, she said this 92% number, which is completely farcical. It's about 1-to-1, meaning one combatant, one Hamas terrorist militant versus one civilian, except we know that they hide in the civilian infrastructure, right? In mosques, in hospitals, in schools, et cetera, et cetera. They've actually been building more hospitals just so that they can hide the weapons underneath. So these people, they're all very confused. There's always an excuse. And at the end of the day, Hamas is the elected government of Gaza, and every government, I mean this for every government on earth, every government on earth has the right to defend its people the best way it sees fit. So if the Gazan government, Hamas, thinks the best way to defend its people is to slaughter 1,300 innocent people and burn babies and behead people and all of those things, well then you're probably gonna have hell to pay, and that's exactly what they're going through right now. I'm gonna show you one other clip of this. This is really interesting. There's a guy by the name of Mosab Yosef. He is the son of the co-founder of Hamas, which just kind of seems funny to me. Like the co-founder, he's the CEO and the CFO and the co-founder, and he raised the funds, and we have a great business here. We're gonna sell it and go public. He is Mosab Yosef, son of the co-founder of Hamas, but he has turned on Hamas and is exposing a lot of their craziness, and especially how it sort of gets proliferated throughout the West.
I've read it that the charter of Hamas is to eliminate the Jewish race, beginning with Israel, but not stopping with Israel, wiping them off the face of the earth. Is that true?
This is true, but it does not end there. Now we have the problem of the pro-Palestine, who are actually given Hamas cover. They are participants in the crime. In fact, since October 7, I personally don't differentiate between Hamas and what's so-called Palestinians. Because actually there is no Palestinians. There are tribes. There is the tribe of Hamas, and there is the tribe of the Islamic Jihad, and there is the tribe of Khalil, and there is the tribe of Nablus. And each one has different interests, and all of them are conflicted. If they did not have Israel as the common enemy, they would kill each other. This is the reality of what's so-called Palestine. You don't know what Palestine is. Actually, in fact, the keffiyeh that you are wearing, this is just a statement to show that you really lack the authenticity to represent the case. And what's so-called the cause, you know, this is a human problem.
So you just...
The cause must die. I think enough is enough. And now it's proven, and you are helping Hamas to prove it to the world that Palestine depends on the destruction of the state of Israel. And this is not acceptable, and we are not going to agree to it. And I tell you something, for the next 10 or 20 years, the Palestinian people will pay the bill that Hamas is caused today, and most likely in blood.
Again, I like people who say it clearly, simply, and truly, and that's exactly what he did there. And I love that he's directing it towards that girl who really doesn't know what she's talking about. And of course, he is correct that there are no such thing as the Palestinian people, meaning like a nation of people, other than there are a group of Arabs who live in that area who all want to kill the Jews. And I watched the 47-minute video, and they weren't saying kill the occupiers, and they weren't saying kill the Israelis. They were saying kill the Jews, and they had dead bodies and blood on their hand, calling their mom, saying, "Mom, I killed 10 Jews," and the mom rejoicing. Like, that is really what's going on there. So I think it's worth showing these moments when some of the BS gets exposed, because there is an awful lot of BS out there. And speaking of BS, it's a perfect segue to the next clip that has nothing to do with that other than it's an exposure of BS. But Sage Steele who is now independent. She was an ESPN anchor for many, many years, sort of has a similar political trajectory as me, kind of like a moderate lefty most of her life, has had definitely had an awakening. We've got her in studio next week, right? We've got her right here in studio next week, so we'll follow up on some of the stuff I'm about to show you. But here's a video of her explaining why she left ESPN. ESPN, of course, which is owned by Disney, giant corporate control. Take a look.
You were with ESPN and then suddenly you weren't. Briefly taking us through what you personally experienced.
I've lived in fear for many, many years. Fear of not being liked, fear of everything. I hit that point where I knew that I didn't stand up for myself. It was now or never. And I just said enough. They just kept pounding me because I was different and I wasn't following their narrative and I just would stay silent. And then I'm like, enough. You can't allow all of my coworkers to go on ESPN platforms and do all these things and talk about Roe versus Wade or ignore the Leah Thomas Riley Gaines story. I asked for months to talk about that and they quieted me. So I went on social media and I was told to be quiet on social media. And I was like, nope, because I support women and you can't say we support women and then not support women. And I just got tired and sad and said enough.
Okay, so there she is under the corporate control. She couldn't tweet about, you know, men that are beating women in swimming. She couldn't tweet about some of the other race stuff and BLM and all that. Finally woke up. And now I want to show you just a very, very quick clip of Sage Steele. This is 4 years ago interviewing Joe Biden. It's a quick bite and then I'll explain why.
Here as we get set for a wonderful day in sports. Opening day for America's national.
Oh, so guess what? I don't need to show you any more of that interview because surprise, surprise, turns out that the entire thing was choreographed. Questions were given to her. The questions were given to Biden. And here she is explaining a bit of the network and corporate control over that interview.
This was about 2 months after he took office. That was an interesting experience in its own right because it was so structured and I was told, you will say every word that we write out. You will not deviate from the script and go to the word. Like every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many executives, editors and executives. Absolutely. I was on script and was told not to deviate. It was very much, this is what you will ask. This is how you will say it. No follow-ups. Next. I knew that this was a lot bigger than just the wonderful editors that I worked with. This went up to the fourth floor, as we said, that were all the bosses, the top executives, the decision makers are the president of our company.
Okay, so I don't need to show you any more clips of her interviewing Biden, and you're probably not surprised by that, right? You work at a giant corporation, ABC, NBC, ESPN, CNN, et cetera, and you're going to get the president of the United States, especially Biden, who's in diminished capacity, even 4 years ago, when she just said he had just taken the presidency, he was 2 months in, basically. They are not going to let you just ask him questions. They're not going to let him just sit down and chat for an hour, which is why he doesn't do podcasts, even with friendlies, right? Everything is controlled. He always has his notes in front of him that tell him who he's talking to or who he's going to answer a question from, et cetera, right? They're handing him stuff that it looks like a third grader should be reading. That's where we're at. But Sage continued. She was on Adam Carolla's show this morning, and she had a bit more info on that whole situation.
Late breaking news, you did an interview with Biden a couple of years back, and the scuttlebutt is it was all sort of pre-scripted. Is that fair to say?
Very much. Word for word.
Word for word. Here are the questions.
Yes. Trust me, as a journalist, it made me sick. Like, what? That's just wrong. Because it's one thing to have the questions scripted, and which never happens in my career. It was the first time in 28 years, first mm-hmm. time. Almost the worst part to me was that I wasn't allowed to ask a follow-up question.
Oh, is that part of the stipulation?
Yes.
So that's interesting.
So if he said something, which he did, a couple of things about his thoughts on why the Major League Baseball All-Star Game should be taken out of Atlanta at that point,
right,
because of all the racist voter laws, and I wanted to push back and say, well, what do you mean by this? Even if it's just to clarify something.
Yeah.
As a journalist, that's my job, to listen and ask, because it's not about me, it's about the viewers who are trying to listen to the commander-in-chief. And I wasn't allowed to even ask a follow-up. And there's a lot more to the story, which... what led to, I think, me getting the Biden interview, which I will reveal at some point. I'm not quite there yet. But at the same time, I'm not going to say no,
so
right?
Because Atlanta was Jim Crow 2.0, which then turned into Jim Eagle, which is about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. You. But thank you, race baiter. Thank you, race hustler.
It just cracks me up. And I wanted to say, wait, Jim so Eagle. You think we're black people are not smart enough to remember to bring our ID when we stay in line anywhere. Because, by the way, well, if we're driving a car to get in line.
To get an ID. He thinks you're not smart enough to get an ID, not remember to bring one.
Right. But in the meantime, I'm the racist for asking a question, for saying, wait, what is this?
All right. So first off, whatever else it is that she wants to reveal about that, as I said, we have her in studio next week. So I will hopefully get that information out of her. But she also said something almost as a side there, that's the most interesting part. She's like, but I did the interview, meaning like she knew there were all these controls. It was never how she operated as a journalist for 28 years, but I did the interview because the president's willing to sit down with you, you do the interview. But that right there shows this massive divide that we now have between the online media, how that operates, and how the corporate media operates. Because think about it, if you're a corporate media guy, you're saying, okay, I will take a big check to work for you. I will do what you say. Versus online, especially if you're independent, and not everybody's independent, but if you're independent, all I can do is what I think is right. I'm the boss, I'm paying the checks, I'm bringing in the money, and I can just do what I think is right. And if one day I do something really stupid and Dave Rubin brings me into the office and smacks me down, well then, so be it. But it shows you why you would get a certain type of person when you guys wonder, well, how is it that Jake Tapper is just so bad on CNN and Joy Reid is awful on MSNBC and that long list of people that we could go through. It's like, well, they've chosen to go into that machine and take the money for it. In a weird way, I don't even mean that as like some highly controversial statement. It just is what it is. But I want to show you, speaking of mainstream media, I want to show you one other clip. It's completely unrelated. As I said, we were just doing a little bit of catch up today, but there is a great video. This is the president of Guyana shutting down a BBC reporter because Guyana has just come into some natural resources. And of course, as a BBC reporter, you have to try to shut down any ability for a country to be energy independent because the climate is changing and we're all going to die. 5 minutes.
Let's take a big picture look at what's going on here. Over the next decade, two decades, it is expected that there will be $150 billion worth of oil and gas extracted off your coast. It's an extraordinary figure, but think of it in practical terms. That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you as a head of state went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there. Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon? A forest that we have kept alive? A forest that we have kept alive.
Does that give you the right?
Does that give you the right to lecture us on climate change? I am going to lecture you on climate change because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world. And guess what? Even with our greatest exploration of the oil and gas resource we have now, we will still be net zero. Guyana will still be net zero. With all our exploration, still be net zero.
Powerful words, Mr. President.
I'm not completed as yet. I am not finished as yet. I am just not finished as yet. Because this is the hypocrisy that exists in the world. The world in the last 50 years has lost 65% of all its biodiversity. We have kept our biodiversity. Are you valuing it? Are you ready to pay for it? When is the developed world going to pay for it? Or are you in the pockets? Are you in the pockets of those who have damaged the environment? Are you in the pockets? Are you and your system in the pockets of those who destroyed the environment through the Industrial Revolution and now lecturing us? Are you in their pockets? Are you paid by them? Are you
I like that Muhammad Ali. His name is Muhammad Ali. How great is that? But it's just perfect. It's such a perfect illustration of these activists masquerading as journalists, this British journalist, quote unquote, trying to guilt this guy. Your country's gonna have energy and it might affect the climate. It's like, it doesn't even matter what Britain has done or not done to the climate, or if you believe any of that, or the British Empire. It's like all of these nations that have had their industrial revolutions to now tell other countries, you can't do that, you can't find your own energy and everything else. It's just, and really the point of showing you that, to connect it to the Sage Steele thing, really, was like the way he just turns it on them. Who is paying you? Why are you asking me this combative question? Muhammad Ali, FTW, I think is what they say. All right, guys, we got a Rubin Report community Q&A coming up for you in just a second. But first, a quick ad from Preserve Gold. So a new central bank digital currency is coming your way and could replace digital dollars with digital currency. I'm sorry, could replace regular dollars with digital currency. With it could come surveillance of our lives, freezing of assets, and governmental control of our bank accounts and how we spend our own money. Americans who want to protect their liberty and privacy need to prepare themselves for what's to come. That's why many Americans are turning to physical gold and silver to diversify their wealth. If you want to help protect your retirement, I recommend you request your free investment guide with my friends at Preserve Gold today. They'll explore the right options for you and will help you with the process to have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA, 401k, or other qualified retirement account. And they make it easy. They're a BBB accredited with zero consumer complaints and hundreds of satisfied clients. They're also a founding member of the Precious Metals Association, so you know you're in good hands. And as an exclusive offer for Rubin Report viewers, they'll give you up to $10,000 in free gold and silver with a qualifying purchase or retirement account rollover. They'll even throw in an immediate $500 into your account credit if you request your investor guide today. So don't wait, visit preservegold.com/Dave today to get your free gold and silver investment guide and take the first step towards protecting your wealth. Again, that's preservegold.com/Dave to get your free guide from the good people at Preserve Gold. And now back to me. Okay, rubinreport.locals.com community Q&A. Let's add a question or two on the fly from the good people who are in the Locals community right now. Sun Eagle says, when does your RFK interview come out on Locals? It'll be out on Monday. I think we've got a still image from yesterday. We had RFK in here for about an hour, and it was really like we just got started. When they were giving me the signal that we had to wrap, he had to get up to West Palm for another event. I was like, man, we just started. You know, he's so thoughtful. He's so in the weeds about the details on absolutely everything, especially the COVID stuff, but the swamp and how the machine works and everything. We had a lunch, my team with his team and a few other people, a little bit before the interview. And he's just so thoughtful and decent. And we didn't even get into that much of like, do we agree on this or agree or disagree on that? It was much more just like, is there a path for you? That's what I wanted to lay out to him, because I think a lot of people really like the guy. The polling is showing that, right? I mean, he's still polling around 20%, which if we had an honest media, which we don't, that would be a huge story, that there's a independent candidate, not from either of the major two parties, especially because his name is Kennedy, which is associated with the Dems, and he left the Dems because they've gone so radical, and he's polling extremely well. And you'd think that the mainstream media would be covering it more. They're not, because he's actually a threat, I think, mostly to the Democrats. But what I wanted to really discuss with him was, okay, if people like you and you're not too radical in your positions and you seem pretty thoughtful and you have a good track record of fighting for the right causes and all of that stuff. And again, I have some disagreements with him a bit on guns, probably a bit on some of the environment stuff, like his use of government in some capacity. But it's clear he's a good guy, right? And he has a vision for the country and all the rest of it. What I wanted to focus on is there a chance? Because everybody that talks about him is like, okay, well, I basically like him, but like, is there a chance? Can he get on all the ballots? One thing, I'll give one little tease. He said that basically every week starting next week, for the next 20 weeks or something, they are going to announce two states that they're on the ballot for. So he claims they will be on all 50 states and the District of Columbia, and they're just going to start laying out all the states. The states that he said were most complex, it was New York, Texas, and was there one other? And Florida was the third one? Wow. So those are the most complex to get on the ballots, but they're figuring it out. You need a certain amount of signatures and everything else. And then it's like, if he's on, then there's something interesting happening. And whether you... if you're watching this and you absolutely love Trump or you love Biden, I don't know why you're watching this show, but whatever it is, the idea that a third party could get involved and that there might be another way of thinking between, you know, outside of just this binary lunacy, it's just net good, I think, either way. Casey says, is bird flu the next big scary thing? And where did Haiti go? Yeah, what happened to Haiti? We had a week of Haiti and cannibals and a guy and barbecue eating people. And then they just, they're holding a YouTuber hostage, apparently. I don't know what's going on with Haiti. I guess we can maybe pick up on that next week. And is bird flu the next big thing? You know, who knows what the next big thing is? You know, the thing with the things is that we just never know it. We never fully expect it. And it's like, is it going to be a terrorist attack? Is it going to be an EMP? Is it going to be bird flu or swine flu? Is, like, who the hell knows? There's just so much weirdness in the system right now. And that's why a couple days ago on the show, I was talking about how, you know, in Israel, for everything that they've had to survive and go through, and it's not just since October 7th, before that, years of suicide bombings and stabbing people on the street and all, and car rammings and all of this craziness, it's made them a very serious country, right? Like, they had a serious fault, an internal fault on October 7th, but they deal with things seriously. Like, when tragedy happens, they know how to coordinate, how to volunteer, how to stick together, largely. And my fear with America is we're not that serious anymore. We're so debating whether your genitals have anything to do with your gender that when bad stuff happens, we're all gonna go even crazier. And I think that's why I'm trying to do the show the way I'm trying to do it. It's why I wanted to have RFK on yesterday. It's why, you know, we just had Vivek on, which some of the clips are up right now. And it was like, I had some tension with him throughout the campaign, but it's like, he's obviously a good guy. We see a lot of the things in a similar way, not everything, but it's like, okay, you're kind of in the mix of sane people right now. And that's really what I wanna just keep pushing on. It's why when I had Ben Shapiro on a couple days ago, I didn't wanna focus on, okay, are we just gonna all fight about everything, but how can we find common cause with some of these people? And what divides you and Tucker is certainly well within the Overton window of what is okay in America, because we better start doing some prep work. I mean that literally and figuratively. Before the shit hits the fan. It's the only way we will get to the other side of it. Colorado says, what do you make of religious institutions contradicting their creeds? I follow a new podcast titled Fox and Father, hosted by Lawrence Fox and Father Calvin Robinson, a priest in the Free Church of England, separate from their state church. Reverend Robinson made mention of the Archbishop of Canterbury sending out a Ramadan message and apparently encouraging Christians to follow Muslims' example in fasting and prayer. How about no, we Christians will keep Jesus Christ's life as an example. Thank you very much. Well, look, every religion, if we just went through the big three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they have what is in the book. They have the law of the letter. Very, very few people in any cases follow that absolutely. There are some, it's pretty rare, there are some. And then every one of those religions, although Islam less, but certainly Judaism and Christianity. Judaism, you've got, you know, the Orthodox movement, you've got the conservative movement, you've got the reform movement. Each one is like shaving off a little bit of the original texts, right? And everyone figures out a way to incorporate whatever piece of that they can into their life, or no piece of it, right? Christianity, there's many denominations. There's Catholicism, there's Protestantism, et cetera, et cetera. Like, everyone finds something that kind of works for them. But yes, I think that there, if you are a believer in one of these things, there is something that is like the ideal thing that is the real thing. And then there's what you do in your life relative to that real thing. And sometimes you do it more and sometimes you do it less, but you shouldn't be trying to alter that thing. I think Christians struggle with this a lot when they see like all of these churches that are having all of the LGBTQ pride things everywhere. And it's like, okay, there might be a Christian lesson to learn about tolerance and how you should treat your neighbors and all of that stuff, but it doesn't mean you should be promoting transgenderism. By the way, that's what they do in Reform temples, but they don't do that in Orthodox temples. So everyone has their own little ways to associate and I would say rationalize their life and beliefs. I would say that includes me, but you shouldn't be out there to change the original texts. The original texts are what they are, whether it's the Bible or the Jedi text. They are what they are. Those, you can't mess with those. I just watched Last Jedi over the weekend. That should have been changed, actually. But you can't change that. Dennis Prager talks a lot about this, actually, usually from a Jewish perspective. Like, there are things that the Bible says. Do you want to live by those things? And if you don't, that's okay, but don't try to change that. That seems right to me. X-House says, hey, Dave, what celebs do you have in your cell phone that you regularly trade texts with? Tucker, Shapiro, Tulsi, President Trump? Do you discuss political topics or trade ideas with any of them while writing your show scripts every day? I don't have President Trump in my phone. I do have Tucker and Tulsi and Ben and Jordan, obviously. My favorite one is my favorite basketball player of all time, Clyde Drexler, who my agent years ago on my birthday just sent me his contact card. Said, happy birthday, Dave, and here's Clyde Drexler's number. And we text a couple times a year just about basketball nonsense. Who are my other celebs? I mean, I've got some, I don't know, feels like kind of, I've got Brock. You're a celebrity in your own mind. That's pretty good. What's that? And then the second part of the question was, who do I text before writing scripts for the show? Once in a blue moon, I'll run something by Jordan, usually not before a show, but after a show, as I'm trying to think something through, or did we kind of nail that right? Or did I really tie it all together? I'll send a clip to Jordan and ask him what he thinks of it. But usually in the morning, I've told you guys this before, I'm sending Phoenix stuff throughout the day. He's given me the basic outline for the show. We kind of get the narrative to be there. Sometimes I move some things, usually not actually. And we have something that feels like kind of holistic and right. And then there's sometimes days like today where we're just like, you know, we couldn't get this Dr. Phil thing didn't quite fit this week. The Sage Steele thing didn't fit. Can we get that in with the Q&A? And we just kind of catch up on things. Alex says, would it be a good idea to halt all immigration, legal and illegal, and try to get our country back in order before letting anyone else in? I think there's absolutely an argument for it. As for legal immigration, if you are on the list and our processes are working and we're doing the proper background checks, and these are all ifs, because it's like, who is in charge of the border right now? And we know that it's not the best and the brightest. I think we can still have a certain amount of legal immigration. As for illegal immigration, I mean, by the definition of it, we shouldn't have any of it. Like, that's not me being a dick or being racist or anything like that. Like, you have legal immigration. You don't have illegal immigration. So we should have zero illegal immigration, and then we can all discuss what the numbers are. How many people can come in? How do you vet them properly? Do they have family here? Do they have jobs lined up? Are they just gonna be an endless suck on the system? Are we gonna send them to cities where they'll live on the street or then be put into hotels and taxpayers will have to pay for it? Like, all of that stuff is obvious nonsense. And yet we have one political party that is completely for it and one that seems inept to do anything about it, except at the state level in certain places, like this state that I'm in right now. So I don't know that you stop legal immigration, but I think broadly, like, we can't do this much longer. I guess that's what it is more than anything else. Like, no country can do this much longer where you're basically just letting everyone in. And then yesterday we did quite an extensive show on some of the crime that these people are doing. But even if they're not up to no good, you can't just keep letting people in and then having them rely on a system that other people are paying for. Eventually that thing will collapse. So yes, how about no illegal immigration and then tighten up what the legal immigration is, and then we can kind of go from there. But the irony, of course, always is that the Democrats will tell you that America is systemically racist, it's evil, capitalism is horrible, our founding documents are old and nonsensical, and then it's like, but also let everybody here to share in the horror, apparently. Mary says, expat American, originally from Michigan, 30 plus years in Quebec, currently trying to escape Canada. I never thought I would want to move back, but now I'm hurrying to secure citizenship for my son before he becomes ineligible. He turns 18 in a year. What do you think about the system collapse in Canada? Do you think the U.S. could ever establish a Canadian-style medical euthanasia program? You know, it's very sad to me what's happening in Canada right now. Canada does feel like it is very far from the Canada of even 5 or 10 years ago, right? I think Justin Trudeau has been one of, if not the worst, authoritarian, dishonest promulgators of all of the wrong ideas that we're seeing in the West right now. Obviously, he was horrible on COVID, but just everything that he's doing, his endless obsession with the LGBTQI two-spirit plus thing, like, all of it is just terrible. And a lot of Canadians are realizing it doesn't work anymore. There are Hamas rallies virtually every weekend in Toronto and in Quebec, where you are. Quebec seems to be particularly bad. I can tell you down here in Florida, you know, we get a lot of Canadian snowbirds. So people that want to get out of your winters and come down here for 6 months out of the year. And then obviously they usually go back to Canada. A lot of people I'm meeting are like, I don't want to go back, or they're trying to figure out how to extend their stays and everything else. As for the euthanasia program, I mean, they're really encouraging euthanasia in Canada. And they're going to kill off probably a lot of people who don't want to die or shouldn't be killed, or maybe we could figure out ways to help them or anything else. But that doesn't that just feel like the next step in everything that we've done as it relates to COVID and vaccines and everything else? Like, you people over there, you should probably die a little bit earlier. We'll give more people the choice to just off themselves and see what happens. So anyway, I love Canada. I love the Canadian sense of humor, the Canadian spirit. Every show that Jordan and I ever did in Canada, or that I did solo in Canada, I've always loved the people of Canada. I know we have a huge amount of Canadian viewers, and it's very unfortunate what's happening in your country. And I think partly what's happening in your country is that Canadians are just kind of nice, decent people. And there's not a ton of people in Canada, but it's a huge geographic space. And Canadians never really thought that bad things would happen there, right? So they were sort of, it's sort of what's happened to our liberals, like just like a softness. It was just, oh, everything will always be fine, eh? But then one day you realize that the poutine is poisoned and you better figure out what you're gonna do about it. Nexus says, what's your favorite thing about New York City? You know, look, I love New York City when I was there. I was young, I was struggling financially, doing stand-up. Like, I think back to that as the good old days, even though at the time a lot of it were sucky days, you know, standing on street corners, handing out tickets to comedy shows in the rain and snow and everything else. But the one thing I miss, it's New York City pizza, like, without question. It's pizza or bagels, but it's pizza more than the bagels. Like, and the thing is, a lot of the mom and pop pizza shops in New York City with the, you know, just this like fat guy in a white t-shirt, greasy, sloppy pizza, they're all gone. There's very few of them left. You know, Miami, we're getting some of the New Yorkers are moving down here and bringing some good pizza and good bagels with them. But we have more like artisan pizza here. Joe's Pizzeria just opened up in Miami, which is like a New York staple. And it's actually pretty damn good. What's his name from Barstool just did a review of it. And I think he gave it an 8.5. So that's here in Miami now. But just that sloppy, greasy slice that you'd have and you'd crunch it, you know, because in New York City, you slice, you put it in half because you're just walking while you're eating because everything is just going and going and going. I do miss that. There is a decent pizza place. I don't know the name of it, but I think it's on 48th between 6th and 7th. It's a little hole in the wall that it's right near Fox News. So when I go over there in New York, you should grab a slice over there. Elizabeth says, if money was no consideration, how would you spend your idea of a perfect day? I mean, I'm pretty simple. Like, if I got up, had a nice light breakfast, if I could work out for a little bit, or you know what, we're gonna add the kids into this one. I was just gonna do a day solo by myself, but no, how about if I just get up, have a cup of coffee, if I can play with the kids for an hour in the morning, and you know, once they eat, like that first hour is just great energy and everybody's happy and good and just all that. Then if I can work out maybe for an hour, jump in the pool, if I don't have a cold plunge here, but if there was a cold plunge, hot tub situation, just do all that kind of stuff. Relax on the beach, that would be nice. Have a little tequila once the golden hour starts arriving around 5:30 or so. Nice little tequila as the sun's coming down. Listen to some good music, be with some friends and family. Like, I'm very simple. I don't need a lot of stuff. But when we do our Off the Grid August thing, like, I don't need a lot. I just like some peace and some quiet and the disconnect. And that is pretty much it. Iowa Proud says, hey, Dave, unless I missed it, I haven't seen a public apology from Chris Cuomo for the way he treated people during COVID. So why am I seeing him regularly on various podcasts and no one seems to hold him accountable for his actions or statements? That is a good question. And I am told we have just got in touch with Chris Cuomo's people and I'm supposed to text him. So I guess I'll have Chris Cuomo's number to see if we can arrange a sit down. I guess him here and me doing his show. You know, I've been very, especially during COVID, I was very, very critical of him. I think he was one of the worst of the worst. He was running cover for his brother, Andrew Cuomo, who was killing an awful lot of old people. That's just a fact. As governor of New York, you know, sending these COVID patients back into the old age homes. You know, he had that sort of ridiculous, very theatrical moment where he claimed he had COVID and then he was living in a basement and comes up after working out and sweating, like pretending he's okay. I'm not a huge fan of the guy, to be honest, but I will sit down with him because I am in this mode, as you can tell, trying to build bridges every which way we can. So I will try to sit down with him and I'll ask him that. I will ask him that. You know, look, it may be the answer. Maybe now that he's not with CNN anymore, he can give the more honest answer and say, boy, you know, the executives did kind of push me to do this, or I wanted to keep my job or whatever else. Like, let's see what's there. Dove says, would you rather live in Canada or Dearborn, Michigan? I mean, Canada's huge and you can definitely find a place. Isn't Hoth the ice planet of Hoth? That's part of Canada, right? You could live there away from everybody. But those are the two choices. Ugh, that's disgusting. No, Dearborn, Michigan, they'd probably have me killed within a week. I mean, it is a Hamas hotbed over there. Rashida Tlaib is an anti-American communist lunatic. So much of what is happening politically right now, the radicalism of the Democrats, is because they're trying to keep Michigan. And no, I want nothing to do with that place. Grand Rapids, Michigan is quite nice. I did a show there a long time ago. But I want nothing to do with that. And Canada, yeah, it's big enough that you could figure out a little something. You know what I mean? You get a little house on the lake outside of Toronto, everything will be okay. Frank says, hey, Dave, what is the one thing that surprised you the most in your visit to Israel? I mean, I guess like the easy answer would be like as shocking and horrific as the videos were, like seeing the videos and seeing the proximity to Gaza. I guess that was shocking to some extent, but I was expecting it to be pretty awful. So that's not quite the answer. You know, the shocking thing actually, and Connor and Phoenix can probably testify to this as well, is that they're in the midst of the war right now. They're still in the midst of the war. 1,300 people killed, you know, 150 people that are hostages. Every single person in the country knows somebody that was either killed or is a hostage, either be a relation or friendship. Like every single person that you talk to there knows somebody. That it's as simple as that. They have, you know, protests, they have rallies, all of these things. But one night in Tel Aviv, the whole place is still hopping. The country's still hopping. And I was out till like 4 a.m. And there were people dancing and doing shots and living life. And it sits there that this horrible thing has happened, but it doesn't stop them from living. And I think that that's when I talked earlier about, you know, that they're a serious country and that they can get through serious things. That's what I'm worried about in America. If something horrible happens again, you know, after 9/11, we largely were united. I'm worried that if we have something horrible happen down the pike, which seems inevitable to some extent, that the division that we're seeing is just going to spread out that much further. So to see people that have been through something horrific, like unimaginably horrific, and it's still happening, like if we're to believe that any of these hostages are still alive, if they get them out, they're going to look like Holocaust survivors. And then just try to imagine the national wound that will unravel. But yet they're out there, they're still laughing and dancing and doing their thing. And that tells you something about life. Meg says, something I've been thinking about recently is how people are waking up on both sides of the aisle. My sister and I have completely different political views, but we both agree that our presidential candidates are terrible and that the university system is broken. Do you see people in your personal life coming around on some of these issues, or at least agreeing that something is wrong with these systems? Yes, absolutely. And it is a great, I suppose, vindication for me, probably personally and professionally. I'm kind of over the professional side. You know, I did the Why I Left the Left thing. I got a lot of hate from people that I didn't think were going to hate me, and a lot of love from people that I didn't think were going to love me. But I would say, especially in these last couple months with everything going on in the world, an awful lot of people that I haven't heard from for quite some time are messaging me, are reaching out to me and going, Dave, I guess maybe you weren't that crazy and maybe you're not a right-wing maniac and maybe this identity politics thing that you were talking about 7 years ago that we now know as woke, maybe it really was a danger and it wasn't just going to stay on college campuses and all that. That doesn't make those conversations any easier when you start getting into the weeds with people, but we've had a lot of family here for the last 2 weeks or so. And our family is probably just like your family. There are people of all political stripes living in all different places. We don't all agree on things, but I think largely people have shifted a little bit more towards where I am. And I'm very happy to hear you say that you and your sister, if you disagree on the politics, if at least you're coming together on just like sanity part. So it doesn't mean you have to agree on taxes exactly, or even abortion. But like, if you can agree that there's something beyond that, we can agree to disagree. And that's also, by the way, why I wanted to have RFK on yesterday and why I think you'll really enjoy the talk. It's almost irrelevant whether the guy can actually become president. But the choice, and it doesn't matter if you absolutely love Trump and he's the wrecking ball to destroy the machine, that all may be true. But this thing that we're doing, we're just repeating the last election with the same two guys and they're both, you know, around 80 years old. Something is not right. We all know it. And we got to figure out a way out of it. And the only way we're going to do that is with some conversation. So doing it with you and your sister is great. Janzi says, hey, Dave, have you heard that the CDC has removed all the ivermectin misinformation they posted during the great COVID scam? I did not hear that. So they've removed, you know, one of the things that they had to do, the CDC, is they had to tell you that ivermectin and HCQ and some of these other remedies, they had to tell you that they didn't work because it was the only way that they could get the emergency authorization for the mRNA vaccines, quote unquote vaccines, because if there were alternative things that were working, they wouldn't have got the emergency authorization. That's just how the system works, or I should say doesn't work. So I suppose now they can go in and tell you that some of this stuff works. I took ivermectin when we got COVID. We got COVID right when we moved to Florida. I took ivermectin and I did monoclonal treatment, which you could get here in Florida. And then the federal government stopped that, like on the spot, because they saw that there were good results in Florida and they didn't want that happening. And I had COVID and my knees hurt for a couple days and that was basically it. So no, that does not surprise. I didn't know that specifically, but it doesn't surprise me. Terry says, did you have any wild stories back in your college days? I did, Terry, and that's not for a daytime program. Maybe we'll do a nighttime show one of these days where we explore some of the, I lived a life and now I'm just a 47-year-old guy with some kids and just trying to get through the day. That's how it is. Nick says, what's the most important life lesson you remember ever learning? Well, I can obviously give you a lot of Jordan stuff and all that kind of thing, but I will give you something else. I will credit my buddy John, who I've been best friends with since we met when we were 4 years old, the first day of kindergarten in 1980. John said to me, this is now flash forward, we're probably about 20 years old, and I was dealing with some nonsense and struggling with something. And John told me something that I have lived my life by since. I credit him with this, with just the two of us all the time. But he said, Dave, you've got to trust your gut until it goes so wrong that you reevaluate. Otherwise, trust your gut. And that is something that I have really tried to do. You know, we're always supposed to listen to experts and listen to scientists. I think you have something in you that orients you to something that is right and true. I think we actually all have it in us, and we silence it. We silence it and we ignore it because we're so lost in this thing. We're so lost in listening to everybody else. But I think most of us know something. You, in those quiet moments when you're, say, staring at the beach, looking at the ocean, like sometimes that voice pops in you and you can kind of make some sense of things. So I find sometimes when I'm going to sleep, I think we probably all have this, like as your brain is kind of shutting down and you're purging out some of the nonsense of the day, you'll hear something true, and then you kind of forget it the second that you know it. And that's whatever you want to call that. You want to call that your internal whatever, it's your gut, whatever. But I think if you rely on that mostly, and then if you do that, I think mostly things will go right. But if then something goes like unbelievably, horrifically awry, then you reevaluate. But that thing that is within you, that is the thing that I think you're supposed to follow to the best extent that you can. Guys, part one of my interview with Vivek, not Vivek, Vivek Ramaswamy is up right now. The full thing's already on Locals. We got a People of the Internet at 1 p.m. Eastern. I will be on Sean Spicer's show later today. Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the postgame wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.